So, basically, this thing about understanding spiritual literature, scripture. So, previously we see that these scriptures were written after few centuries, like Quran, it's after 300 years or so. Same thing we see in the Bible. So, you have the, because there has to be a cosmology, it was taken from the Old Testament, which was the existing Jew cosmology. And then you had the New Testament. New Testament is a very beautiful thing. But it's about like a master and disciple. So if you read the New Testament, there are different versions of different people. It's a very beautiful, small little thing, easy to read. And very, very, very sweet. Matlab, it gives a kind of, one can see that he had his spiritual knowledge very clearly and his spiritual vision. And, but then later on, many things build up around it. That's how religions are formed, you know, that after the founder goes away. Now people don't know. Did he say it? Did he say something else? All these interpretations, because nobody was there to record and document it physically. So one, and as I was saying, even about Gita, people say, you know, whether he spoke or it was interposed in the Mahabharata. Of course, Shivindu cleared it very beautifully that yes, it is during the war. And also he said very clearly that in any case, its truth stands. That's how one has to see a spiritual scripture. But with Sri Aurobindo, we see something very unique and beautiful, which is important to understand and realize. Knowing all this that had happened, knowing that what had happened in the past, you know, what happened in the past, every religion, you see Islam split into Shias and Sunnis, fighting till date. You see what happened in Christianity, Protestants and Catholics. Then what happened in India, Shaivites and Vaishnavites. Not that, you know, we were any better. There was the fight going on. Who is greater, better? And see, many Puranic stories. If you read Vishnu Puran, Vishnu is highest. You read Shiv Puran, Vishnu is secondary. Now, because of all this confusion, Shubhinda and the mother, I am sure, ensured that technology is available for a direct writing on the typewriter. And not only he wrote one scripture, he wrote many, many, many volumes, and there is a reason behind it. Because otherwise, there is a tendency to reduce truth to a fixed formula. Isn't it? So, in the Life Divine, he approaches from one point of view. There also you will see long sentences. Why? Because truth is not like, you may say one sentence, like you may say, God is all. Very powerful. True. But if you don't take it rightly, you're gone. Today only somebody asked Sri Ramakrishna, no, that according to this Vedanta, God is this, according to that, God is that, according to third one, God is this. So, what is your view? So, Sri Ramakrishna, intuitive consciousness, he said, Bab re Bab, so many scholarly things, I don't know. I only know my mother. Very profound truth. I only know my mother. Meaning thereby, it is she who is all. But this truth, if you don't receive by the subtle mind, it will get completely distorted. That's why in ancient times, there was this idea of Adhikar Bhed. Adhikar Bhed you see in Eklavya story. If you are not an Adhikari for a knowledge, it was not granted to you. And unfortunately, it took a hereditary form, which is why it got broken over a period of time. But you had to be an Adhikari. And you can see that we have lost that Adhikar Bhed, and what is the result? Anybody can walk into a virus lab and know all about virus and create one. Anybody can learn about nuclear technology today, and you see the disaster it can create. So this idea of Adhikar Bhed gave rise to certain things, which of course later on got distorted. They became based on surname, etc. But it was like everybody cannot study the Vedas. Why? Because they are likely to either distort the meaning or they are likely to completely go off on a tangent. There had to be great purity in the seeker. It was not reading a book but leading a way of life. So you see it in the Upanishads, that Rishi Pipalad, that Prashna Upanishad. So all the six seekers go to him and say, we want to know about this, we want to know. So what does he say? He doesn't say, okay, deposit your course fee, 2500 or whatever that was. From tomorrow I'll take your class, morning 9 to 11, first session, 2 to 3, another session. He doesn't say that. You know what does he say? Stay here for 1 year. If I see you are fit for the knowledge and if I am able to answer it, then I will answer your questions. 1 year, just stay here. That's why many people, even in the ashram context, you just can't come and join. The reason is you stay for some time. You see the place and the place sees you and there is something else which works. So this is the logic behind it. Adhikar bhed. And Shurbindu says, we have lost it. So it was like, had Eklavya probably come and requested, we don't know what would have happened. But the fact that he was hiding and observing and learning, it was not considered as a good way to learn knowledge because you'll misuse it. Same thing with Karna. That you have come to know weaponry and archery because you want to beat Arjuna. That is not a reason for gaining such knowledge. That was his motive. So that's why, though the guru is very pleased with him and he has got all the knowledge, at the end he says, if ever you misuse it for a cause of a dharma, it will be taken away from you. Why? Because the basis was wrong. The foundation was wrong. In modern context, it will be, I want to go and study in medical college. Now, not that if you ask people, they say, oh, desh seva and samaj seva. No. Behind is, khub paisa hai. Lot of money is there. So people are willing to pay 80 lakhs, 1 crore rupees for a seat. Why? Because they know they will earn 10 crores. Now, this cannot be a criteria for engaging in a work like healing. So that's why there was with the guru's teaching also. So teachers were always given guru dakshina. So this whole system, but over a period of time it lost its force like any system because it becomes rigid and it has to be broken. New things will come up. So that's how it lost its force. But Sri Aurobindo ensured, that's why he wrote so many volumes. The mother further spoke to fill every little dot and gap. The reason is this. But even there, she said people misquote because still the understanding is, now we read one quote from somewhere. Either we read everything and start applying it, then something will dawn. The general drift will be there that no, this is not what Sri Aurobindo will say. But when we don't have that kind of a plasticity and vastness, then there is a tendency to even misquote, even when it is written authentically, that part is taken care of. But the other part is the true understanding, true vastness, plasticity, which develops as we engage with what we are reading. At the end of the day, it's only by walking the path in real time that the true understanding will come. Otherwise, it will always remain something very theoretical. Okay? So in modern society, this is about Adhikar Bhed, the question, what has replaced it? So as I said, it broke because many things like Chaturvarna, it broke. Why it broke? Because it took an outer form. So what about Adhikar Bhed and Chaturvarna? Have they also gone? They cannot go because they are based on an eternal truth. So what will happen now? Earlier the Adhikar Bhed was based on something outward. Its inner truth will always remain. Let me give an example of a doctor. There is a difference between a doctor and a healer. Anybody can do MBBS nowadays because you have medical colleges on capitation fees. So it's not a good thing at all. It should not be there if you ask me. Medical education should be entirely your own merit. I mean, no reservation, nothing, but well. So what happens then at the end of the day? Because of the democratic society now, which has its purpose. Okay, it's at one level it tries to bring up everybody. Elitism is not, eventually it's not what nature wants. Nature wants everybody to come up. That was the reason why Troy had to go. So one part we must understand, it should not be in the spirit of elitism. But there is something called as Adhikar Bhed. Not everybody is ready for everything. If you make a Brahmin hold the guns, he will hold the gun, but he will be thinking of, should I shoot or should I not shoot? His left brain will say, Ahimsa Paramo Dharma. His right brain will give a different message, but the Gita says, Mama Smara Yuddhascha. Like that, you know, it'll go on. And he will eventually probably shoot or not shoot depending on the situation. because he's a pragmatic person. But what is good if, let's say, Brahmin ever held a gun? He will be good to strategize, because that's his forte. He can make very good strategies. He may not be very good at actually, you know, in the wars. But if you have a Kshatriya by nature. So what happens today? The truth prevails. How in medical, everybody studied medicine very good. Everybody has got a degree. Everybody can practice. Everybody has got now written MBBS, MD, DM, DLit, DIN, DIN, D, 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 D. Okay. Not the joke wala D. Okay. But D. Dot something else. Doctorate or whatever. Niche mein FISSC, FICS, FIPC and all those things. Patients don't understand all that, by the way. Initially, they may be impressed. But what happens when the patient walks inside and out? What they sometimes notice is the smile of the doctor. Sometimes they notice that how the doctor communicated with them. And they come back healed. If they are healed, happy, they will go to you. If they are not healed, all your degrees, because you can't fool all the world all the time. So at deeper level, this truth will remain that all are not healers, even though you have the degree. And nature will ensure that the healer, people will gravitate to the healer. Even if sometimes people for political reasons may go to the state doctor, because they want to be in the good books of the Raja, sometimes that is also done. But still, when they have a real problem, they will not go there. They will go to the healer because they know that now. So this is how it works. Same thing works in different sectors. People eventually find their place according to their inner truth. And where they don't find their place like that, it creates chaos and it creates disorder and confusion. You make a, it's like, you know, you make a person who is, let's say by temperament, he is a warrior. And you know, make him sit on a shop. What will happen? He will end up fighting. If for nothing else, he say, no, you gave me less money. No, this is... He will not understand the way a Vaishya operates. You look at a business person operate. They know the knack. That's why, you know, it. They know the knack of it. They will never fight with you. A true Vaishya will never fight with you. He'll ensure that you happily buy the product and take it. And even if you have given a huge amount of money, you feel very happy at giving that money. Parting the money happily. Because this is the Vaishyahood. It's inside. So, this truth will always remain. And it is what will operate deep within. And eventually the society, of course, society is moving beyond these four. Because there are beings who are ready for going beyond this fourfold order of society. But we must understand its truth. We must understand why everything has to be brought up to same level. And we must understand that it has to go beyond the fourfold order. The fourfold order still belongs to the overmind. In the supermind, each person should embody all of them. Everybody should be a disciple, illumined disciple of truth. Everybody should have the strength and might and straightforwardness and love for truth. Everybody should have sweetness, harmony, charm, love. And everybody should have the eye for perfection and skill in works. Everybody should have all of them. This is the new being which is being created. So the question is that how do we explore as of today? Because the outer methods have broken. So there are two ways one can approach. One is Swadharma, which is what the Gita says. In ignorance, Swadharma is the best guide. What is your spontaneous soul bhava, your soul movement, which needs a study of our temperament, tendencies and all, and see where it best can operate. So this soul bhava or swabhava and swadharma are nothing to do with outer occupation. It is to do with the true turn of nature, soul temperament. So this is one way. But there is a higher way, which will be the way of the higher beings. And that is sarvadharma. This is the Gita points towards that. Sarvadharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja. So it is even abandoning the swadharma is part of it. Sarvadharman. And Sri Aurobindo emphasizes on it. He says, what is sarvadharman? Why has Sri Krishna used this word at the cryptic close of the Gita, where he actually knocks at the doors of the supermind? There are three places where he clearly knocks at the doors of the supermind, but doesn't enter because he knows earth is not ready. One of them is Vishwarupa, where you see the integral Godhead. I am Vyakta, I am Avyakta, I am all this creation. Another is where he cryptically says the yogin who tries to conquer Jara, Mrityu is the highest. Can you imagine? Quietly, Sri Krishna, then, okay. I have to come back as Sri Aurobindo and do this. And then when he says, Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam braja. Sri Aurobindo's yoga starts with that. The demand for surrender is so great in Sri Aurobindo's yoga. People have unfortunately made him like a philosopher sitting there and wanting us to read a lot of scholarly books and come back and discuss and debate with him. But if you see, he speaks of surrender as the beginning, surrender is the path, and surrender is the end. What is that surrender? So one typical example is Rishabh Chand. The story I have told several times. And he comes and he says, surrendered, so whatever work mother gives. And mother gave him the work, he was to look after furniture department. He is very happy. Surrender. But look at the surrender. So next day, the first assignment comes, chit signed by the mother. You have to kill the bugs which are in the bed. Now he has written a very happy letter to mother, full of gratitude. He keeps it aside. Sends another letter to Sri Aurobindo. I think mother doesn't know that I am a Jain. I don't kill and all that. Sri Aurobindo's letter. Whatever work mother gives you is meant to make you progress. So now we have to go beyond all systems, formulas and forms. Systems, formulas, forms are still mental even though they are the highest. One can even be following the highest formulas of existence. The greatest cults, yet. That's what Sri Aurobindo did not want. Another overmind creation. Yet they limit the play of the divine. So we have to now engage, at least those who are ready, with the freedom of the infinite, which alone is true freedom. Since we are, you know, at it, we can touch it like this. The only true freedom that can be there is of the infinite. There can be no freedom for limited beings. It's logical. Limited beings will always have a limited freedom. Can there be a true freedom from a limited being? No. You will say tiger is a freedom. What freedom he has? Freedom to pounce upon a creature and eat it. What is the freedom? He is acting according to the instinct of the species. There is no freedom. He is a bound creature. If he doesn't act according to that, he'll perish. It's not freedom. It is a bond slave of nature. But true freedom is that you have decided a course of action now, and next moment there is a divine command and you can just completely change it. And that we see in Mother and Sri Aurobindo. How does Sri Aurobindo's journey to freedom begin? Here is a whole nation putting him out there. He is the one, the hero of the independence movement. And he gets the Adesh. Sri Aurobindo at one place says, sailing orders. He went through boat. Go to Chandanagar. Next moment he was gone. Then the next Adesh comes. Go to Pondicherry. He didn't say, but sir, you know, I have a great responsibility. Sometime back he has written to his wife. You know, I have a great responsibility because the whole nation is knocking at my doors. But when it comes to the divine, this is freedom. Where at the command of the divine, he leaves it and goes. Because, so ultimate freedom is to act only under the divine impulsion. There is no other freedom which is possible. Only a yogin who is united with the divine can live in freedom. And that freedom means he is no more acting under impulsions of nature, according to certain set rules, according to certain moral, ethical, social, religious prescriptions, nothing. He is like a blank slate. And based on the inner divine, I mean, command is not like every time you are hearing too many voices. If that's happening, please consult a psychiatrist. Authentically. Sri Aurobindo people would say that Tirupati's letters, Sri Aurobindo sent him away, too many voices you are hearing. So he had a voice that jumped into the well, Sri Aurobindo's voice, and he jumped into the well. Finally, Sri Aurobindo sent him away. He says, I am hearing the voice, you are calling me to Pondicherry. He says, no, I am telling you not to come. Sending a telegram. No, 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 you are testing me. Outwardly you are telling me like that, but inwardly you are telling me to come. So that's, of course, because it's a very tricky thing. That's why it takes time to arrive at freedom. But what about then life, freedom of choices and freedom which Sri Aurobindo gave? That is necessary. It is not really speaking freedom, but it is the only way you can explore and discover yourself. People who live within certain, that's a different thing. You know, that's called freedom because, so when we have in society, a given society, various kinds of, if we have too many rules and regulations, let's put it like that. Can you really explore yourself? You can't. Because you have to live according to certain social conditioning. So when you don't have these social conditioning, it's like when somebody, and that's where the flaw of karmic law is. What is the flaw of karmic law? If you do good, if you are an honest taxpayer, you will be granted a seat in heaven. Now, this cannot be a reason for being good, no. If you are honest, the strength of honesty and courage increases in you. That is the karmic law. But we expect that if I have been good, I must get a seat in heaven and be born again in a rich family. So, it doesn't operate like that. So, this freedom will always be a relative freedom, but it is also necessary. Because if you don't have freedom, if you are living under completely social, moral, ethical, religious, then your life is being regulated by 100 things. Now, if your life is regulated in 100 ways, how do you explore? You have a fixed time for things and you have to do it. Now, okay, in a collectivity, there is a discipline which is required. But if your entire life is regulated by the social structures, which is what was happening, especially to women, how can you discover yourself? And therefore, this freedom is also necessary. Now, what happens if people choose wrongly? Yes, they may choose. It's not about right or wrong. They may have a vicious attraction for a dark side of life, what we may call a dark side of life. Go into it. It's okay. They will learn. They will grow. They will come out. I mean, of course, it's understood that if you start stepping on somebody else's freedom and you say that I have a freedom, I'll barge into your house and do whatever I feel like, then that's when the law operates. That's the purpose of law. Ideally speaking, purpose of law is that you have your freedom, you enjoy it, but see that your freedom doesn't encroach upon somebody else's freedom. So as long as that is there, it's perfectly fine. That's why this is the demand of the age. Without it, no authentic growth can take place. Without it, you will have only people wearing girwa vastra and, you know, sitting like that, going to temple every day because it's the custom. But they will never have an authentic change inside. This was the problem of the previous and previous generations. Every day morning, and, you know, I'm sure we all have been a witness to it. They will be in a typical Indian home, at least I can say, like the Sunday church, which mother speaks about on the ship. That, you know, people go Sunday and they think they have paid a debt to God. It used to happen in the Indian context also. Every morning you'll have Hanuman Chalisa. Hanuman then Dudh wala aya, Gusa. That's not what Hanumanji, if he really came with a gada, he is going to break your head. Huh? It's good. He doesn't, he stays away from such places. So it must be understood that, well, if you try to misconduct your freedom, misuse it, your plane will crash. So what happens when it crashes? You learn the lesson. That's why nature operates amorally. We try to bring in the element of that nature should be very kind. It doesn't. It operates in an amoral way. Okay, you crash landed, fine. You will get up again. You will rise up on wings of fire. What is there? Nature has millions of years to... It's okay, one life you just became a drunkard and was lying in Nalla. Nature doesn't judge you on that basis. You had an experience of life that ultimately sentimentality, you thought that by doing all this, others will feel bad that, you know, they didn't understand you. They'll just kick you, that's it. They'll not bother about you. Lie on the Nalla, no problem. After some time, people will just leave you and walk away. See, many of these people are like that, no? Highly sentimental, oh, nobody understands me. So how will people understand you if you do this? But they die doing this kind of thing. Same with suicide. In a particular life, a suicidal person that nobody understands me, nobody loves me, nobody cares for me. So this is an extreme act to draw attention. It's an act of anger. What happens? Do people understand? No, they get angry on you that you left like this. So ultimately we have to understand that nature operates amorally. And it gives you a certain freedom, an illusion of freedom, because it's necessary to operate. But when mind comes in with all kinds of social rules and trappings, it spoils the play of nature. Nature doesn't operate like that. But this was a passage necessary for man, because otherwise we'll just be like animals. So this is how it is. But mental rules society needs. We must understand they are relative, like the lamp before you have the light of Krishna. And we must understand that they must be progressively replaced by freedom. Like a baby at 2, you have to take care. You can't say do what you feel like. At 5, different, 10, different, 15, different. And when he's 20, go and face the world. Because, you know, now you have to grow through your own experience. So that is how freedom, there should be a progressive freedom in a society. It cannot be that freedom for boys, not for girls, and freedom means do anything, everybody drinks and smokes. That's a distortion of freedom. And societies which understand freedom that way, they will degenerate. So again, nature will teach a lesson. So it's all inbuilt very beautifully. If you look from one point of view, perfect planning. Misuse the freedom, you go through your journey, you get the consequences, learn and grow. Use it rightly, you learn it. But freedom is necessary before you learn. If your action is regulated by society, one will never learn. That's the whole thing. Too much by society.